I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
On Inheriting, one event can change a family for generations. Our new podcast about Asian American and Pacific Islander families, where the past is personal. Listen to Inheriting from LAist Studios and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today. I can't thank you enough for being part of raising $1 million over our spring member drive that ended yesterday. $1 million raised in 6 days of on-air fundraising. Thanks to your generosity and your fellow listeners. We can't thank you enough. It's such a pleasure to have Air Talk listeners really at the center of that. Our biggest hours of fundraising during these hours of Air Talk, and we're deeply appreciative of your generosity toward the program and toward all the things that we do here at LAist. We've got a jam-packed program for you coming up a little bit later. We'll be talking about the distinctive architecture of American cities around denser housing. Here in Los Angeles, probably aware of the Bungalow Court. What about the mid-century dingbat, that apartment building with the carports where the cars tuck right in under the building? And of course, you've got the fourplexes in mid-city Los Angeles. We're going to be talking about all these different forms of architecture and how Los Angeles used to be quite comfortable with being a dense city in parts, and what these earlier forms of architecture might provide in the way of ideas for the future. But we begin with a demographic trend that's being seen in multiple locations here in Southern California, and that is the precipitous drop in enrollment of students in public schools. The Inglewood Unified School District has seen such a large drop in its enrollment, it's now planning to close 5 campuses in the district, including Morningside High School and Crozier Junior High School in downtown Inglewood. Hits me particularly hard because I attended Crozier Junior High School for 1.5 years before my family moved to Hollywood, and I finished my middle school education at LeConte, then junior high school in Hollywood. Crozier has been around for many, many years. In the past, it used to be the feeder school into Inglewood High School, which, of course, will remain open. Monroe Junior High in the district will remain open. There are also elementary schools that are going to close: Hudnall TK through 6th, Highland TK through 6th, and Kelso TK through 6th. They will close in addition to Morningside High and Crozier Junior High School. Schools will close at the end of the next, not the current, but the next academic year. Joining us to talk about the reasons for this, James Morris, who is Inglewood Unified Schools County Administrator. James Morris was appointed Administrator of the District by the LA County Office of Education early last year. He had been the superintendent of Fremont Unified and Inglewood Unified because of very serious financial problems going back more than a decade ago. Was first under state operation and now LA County operation. James Morris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
How big a drop in enrollment is Inglewood facing?
Sure. The district enrollment dropped over the last 20 years from about 18,000 students to less than 7,000 today. Pretty significant drop in enrollment.
All right. And so have you been having this conversation with parents and other stakeholders in the community for some time?
Yeah. Over the course of the past about 14 months, we've had multiple town hall meetings, been to PTAs, showing folks the data, really saying, here's what it looks like, here's what the numbers are, and here's what our projections are. We have to get the district's financial house in order, and one of those things that's required is we have to close schools.
How did you identify which campuses to close?
Sure. So there was a lengthy process talking with the community, looking at the geography, looking at multiple factors. What's our enrollment projection, our enrollment today, and what are we projecting over the next 5 years? And at some point, you just have to identify and say, these are the ones we need to close.
Now, Crozier, for example, is very close to Inglewood High School that stays open. I'm curious, well, why close Crozier and keep Monroe on the other side of town open so that the middle school and the high school are so separate?
Sure. All of the schools in the district, with the exception of Highland, Hudnall, and Kelso, have already all converted to a K-8 model. In other words, all of the schools in the district, except for those three, offer a K-8 program. Parents are really voting with their feet. When the neighborhood school offers K-8, they're keeping their child in that neighborhood school. And so when we looked at the enrollment at Crozier, it was only receiving students from three schools, Highland, Hudnall, and Kelso, because the parents didn't have a K-8 option available. And so by making this change, we'll have a consistent pattern of schooling across the district. All of the schools will be K-8, and the high schools will offer a 9 through 12 program.
My elementary school I went to was Centinella. Is that a K-8 now?
Centinella is currently a K-8 school. That's correct.
And how are they able to accommodate the extra three if you count TK in there? How are they able to? Is that just declining enrollment allowed for adding more grades?
That's exactly right. It's declining enrollment. But I think you said something really important at the beginning when you talked about Crozier and your experience there, your experience at Centinella. We have to recognize a school is more than a building. It's a place where memories are made. It's a place where generations of families have gone through. And so it hurts to close a school. It's a loss to people. They're losing something or a part of what was their personal or family history. And so we try to be super sensitive to that. But at the same time, decisions just have to be made.
I have warm memories of going to Crozier, a school that when I went there was just about 50% African American and 50% white, and so many good friendships there at the school, and seeing Inglewood as at that point a city that was heavily African American and white, of course later becoming a majority Latino community, continuing with, I think the latest I saw, about 30% black population in Inglewood. Are charter schools at all a factor in Inglewood?
So charter schools have been a factor in the decline in enrollment over time. Another important factor is every district around us is facing declining enrollment. So there are neighboring districts, Culver City, El Segundo, Manhattan Beach, for example.
Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles, happy to take students in on permit. And so it's a complex issue, the reason for that decline in enrollment. But at the end of the day, we have to face where we are. And at the end of the day, the reason for closing these schools is, number one, we're going to be able to do a better job of serving students, providing programs for them, providing supports for them by having schools that are the right size for what we need. I think, secondly, it's going to give us an opportunity to improve the facilities that we're going to keep open.
You got a lot of deferred maintenance.
We have huge amounts of deferred maintenance, and you know, many of them are infrastructure. You know, Morningside High School a year ago had to close down for the month of January because of a gas line rupture. We have to figure out, these are the buildings that are going to remain open. Voters in Inglewood have been very, very generous. Most recently, about 4 years ago, passed a $240 million bond. We have to spend that money only at the schools that will be open. That's just the way we have to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
In the release that the district sent out announcing the closures of the five campuses, it made the point that for every campus that's open, you have to do the ongoing maintenance of it. You've got utilities that you're running for those campuses, even if they're only a third of capacity, and the support staff. There's certain overhead that each campus requires for safety and the running of a campus, and you're duplicating that campus after campus, whether you've got full capacity of students. And and the full-time attendance from the state reimbursement coming in to pay for the costs of operating the campuses. I want to continue talking about Inglewood, but I'd love to hear from AirTalk listeners who are in districts that are also having these conversations. As we just heard from James Morris, the county administrator for Inglewood Unified, all the districts around Inglewood are going through this as well. And I know that's the case also in Pasadena, which has, for the size of its population, a large number of schools. Pasadena very much had the idea of the smaller neighborhood elementary school. But the problem, of course, is when your student population drops significantly because families can't afford to live in a high-priced community, then you've got all these campuses that you've got overhead to operate and not enough students to attend to make it cost-effective. So I'd like to hear from you. If you are in a district where this is an issue, what do you think your district administrators and board should be taking in mind when it comes to possible school closures? We're at 866-893-5722. 866-893-5722. You can also email us your input at atcomments@las.com. Please include your location and your first name and the district or school you're talking about. You can also post a comment on our AirTalk page, which is at las.com/airtalk. James Morris, what do you say to those who argue this kind of chicken and egg thing? If you close these five campuses, you run the risk of further decline in enrollment because you're taking away some neighborhood campuses that families chose because they're close.
So I think one of the things that we have to do that we've actually done a really good job in Inglewood is, number one, communicating this is all about student achievement. We put in, for example, this year, new reading and math programs at the elementary school level. Phonics-based reading program starting in kindergarten. We have to show we're going to do a great job of teaching kids so that families want to stay. Additionally, through this change, one of them, for example, I think is very innovative and exciting. City of Inglewood is doing a multi-million dollar renovation of the Inglewood Library, which is right across the street from Inglewood High School. One of the things that we're going to be doing, working very closely with Mayor Butts, building a bridge over Manchester Boulevard, making that library that the mayor likes to call the Education and Innovation Center part of the high school, so that now I'm doing a complete, essentially, tear down and rebuild of Inglewood High School for about $200 million. I don't have to build a library anymore. My kids will have access to the most incredible library west of the Mississippi. So part of it is having innovative programs. We have in Inglewood some breathtaking CTE programs, career technical education. We're starting this summer a program with building trades to have young people have an opportunity who want to become plumbers and carpenters and electrician to begin on that pathway. I think additionally, it is those things. For example, Inglewood High School Marching Band. Not this July, a year from July, you're going to see the Inglewood High School Marching Band marching down Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House. So it's providing those things that hook students in and really communicating to the community, yes, right now I have a 65% of the seats overall in the district by 2029 will be empty. 35% fill rate at our schools. At the same time, we're starting these innovative programs to really draw families in and say, this is a great place to have your child educated.
I mean, you wonder for the workforce in Southern California, with families just abandoning in such large numbers coastal Southern California because of the housing costs, what this is going to mean for our future workforce.
Yeah, and I think that's why we have to, I'm preparing that future workforce. And so I have to have the kinds of programs that will prepare young people for a world that, Larry, you and I haven't even imagined. We can't even imagine what we're preparing these young people for.
I just have to say, because you brought up the Englewood Public Library, I owe that public library so much, because after school at Crozier, I would go over and read for hours. I was a latchkey kid. There were times, even in elementary school at Sentinella, that I would ride my bike to the library downtown and spend hours there just in the stacks going through and reading things. It's such a formative part. I probably learned more in my hours in the library than actually in the classroom. Just incredibly important part of my growing up experience. We're going to continue our conversation with the county-appointed administrator for the Englewood Unified School District, James Morris. We're talking about the closing of five campuses there, but also by extension, what other Southern California school districts are facing in the way of loss of enrollment, what that means for aging buildings. Are they going to invest bond money in capital improvements for structures that aren't going to hold full capacities of students? Are they going to be closing schools? These are very, very difficult circumstances, because school boards and administrators have to take into account the geographic distribution of the schools, the age of the campuses, and what's required to bring them up to code and safe conditions for students, and the achievement of those campuses. Also, what connections parents in the community have to particular schools. It's a Rubik's Cube that these districts have to consider when they look at balancing their books and closing campuses. We'll continue our conversation when we come back in just 1 minute. We're with James Morris, Englewood Unified Schools County Administrator. Englewood is under county supervision because more than a decade ago, it was in severe financial problems. The state of California loaned the district the money to bail itself out, but that meant state control of the district, which since has been handed off to Los Angeles County. James Morris appointed by the County Office of Education to manage the Englewood School District. James, before we take listener calls, just real quickly, how close is Englewood to coming out from under county supervision?
So, great question, Larry. So, every year the district has an audit that's done by a state agency. And the district is required to meet a minimum score on 155 standards of what a school district should be doing. Out of the 155 standards, the district has met the minimum score on 127. There are 28 remaining standards that the district has to meet in order to get out of receivership. Most of those are in the area of finance and facilities. Clearly, this is why part of the reason we have to close schools. The other thing I want to say is, over the course of the 12 years, the district has made progress in meeting those standards. I mean, you think of a baseball player who's up to bat, they swing at 155 balls and hit 127 of them. Okay, you're doing pretty well. Now let's work on that last group of 28. And this is exactly what it's about, having the district have the right number of schools and getting our financial house in order.
And you've got the debt to the state of California you're having to service every year as well.
That's about $2.2 million every year off the top to pay for that debt service for poor financial management that happened 12 years ago.
Margot in Reseda, good to have you with us with James Morris of Englewood Unified.
Hi, good morning. I'm curious what will happen to these mothballed campuses, both in Englewood and these other communities, if the district will sell them or lease them to create new revenue or repurpose them.
Yeah, it's a great question. Pasadena, I know with the campuses that they've closed so far, really, you know, this has been an issue. Some of them are still just boarded up. Others have charters that have come in. So what's Englewood planning?
Certainly, Larry. So there is a legally required process that we have to go through. I think a good example was the school district closed down a school about 5 years ago, and that piece of property has been leased to a residential developer to build housing on. That's a way of bringing in long-term revenue to the school district. But as we go through that process with these additional campuses, you're right. Some of them may have to be sold to generate revenue to fix up the ones that are staying open. Some we may find opportunities for leases. Some we may find community partners to bring in community benefit programs on those school sites. Some of them, when you're really wise administrator, you're going to hold on to that property because long term, we know enrollment goes in cycles. We may need to reopen that school in the future.
Well, I'm thinking of Crozier because of where it's located. That's prime real estate, an aging campus. The odds you'd get a private operator want to come in and operate it as a school, I don't mean to hurt your bargaining, I wouldn't think would be great given the age of it, given the size of it. But the real estate, I would assume, is quite valuable that Crozier sits on, being right in the downtown area. So is that a case where you would consider a long-term lease or a sale of the property to maximize revenue?
Sure. Well, Crozier is probably not the best example, Larry, because currently Crozier has two schools on that campus, City Honors High School, which is a district charter high school, and Crozier. And So when we move Crozier off, it will give us an opportunity to expand City Honors, which is one of our schools that has a waiting list. Also at Crozier, we're going to be opening up next year an Arts Media Entertainment Academy. That will be an exciting new opportunity. So students from Morningside High School that's closing will actually have three options. You can go to Inglewood High School, you can go to City Honors, or you can go to the new Arts Media Entertainment Academy at City Honors.
Okay, and that's on the Crozier campus. All right, so you'll be continuing to operate there. All right, but for some of the other sites, like Kelso, for example, some of these other sites, what do you think?
Yeah, so that really is the process we have to go through and kind of look at what's the highest and best use of that property. But we also have to be mindful of having some sites across the town where we have room to expand, because you know and I know 30 years from now, enrollment is going to go back up again.
We hope that housing prices will decline. Steve in Costa Mesa emailed, what happens to teachers and administration when you close schools?
Yeah, in the case of Inglewood, it's a little unique because we have so many vacant positions. Right now, there's a teacher shortage. And so we currently have about 27 vacant teacher positions across the district. So even when we're shrinking, I now have 27 classrooms with subs in those rooms. Next year, I'll have permanent teachers in those rooms. And because of attrition in the district, custodial positions, cafeteria positions, very, very few people actually get laid off in our Inglewood case because of it.
Now, why is it? Now, Pasadena, for example, RIFT, in other words, they sent notice of potential layoffs, just went out, I think, to a couple hundred people in Pasadena. So why is it they might have to carry out layoffs before the next academic year, but you've got all these unfilled positions?
Yeah, well, I think part of it is simply the number of positions, particularly in those hard-to-staff areas, special education, science, mathematics.
Where everybody's struggling.
Yeah, and right now, everybody is struggling, even with, you know, multiple subject elementary teachers. There is just a shortage of teachers in this state, and I'll be the first to tell you, 43 years, teaching is the best job you could ever want. But right now, folks just are being disheartened by wanting to go into the teaching profession. And so because of just the low number of candidates available, we're going to have room to keep almost all of the people who are on our RIF list in the district.
So many families have left Inglewood because of the cost of living and particularly housing. Where does your staff commute from to jobs in Inglewood?
Yeah. So, you know, we have some folks who've lived in Inglewood probably since you were a child school. But we also have a large number of staff who are commuting long distances from, you know, as far as places in the Inland Empire, because that's where they can afford to have a home. And so it really is that balance of finding the right people. You know, we have amazing teachers in Inglewood. They are passionate and caring, But it is hard when you're doing a 1.5 hour commute every day to come to work.
I realize this is over 50 years ago I'm talking about, but my parents moved to Inglewood for the schools because they were so highly regarded. That's why we moved to the city, so I could attend Inglewood Public Schools. James Morris, thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us, talking about the challenge Inglewood's facing, which is so familiar to many of our public school districts in coastal Southern California. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure.
Best of luck in the district. Inglewood Unified Schools County Administrator James Morris with us. He was appointed to the position early last year, so he's been on the job something like 15, 16 months. It's Air Talk on LAist 89.3. Coming up, we'll talk about the latest Noir Film Festival under the programming of Eddie Muller, a founder and host of Noir City Hollywood Film Festival and Noir Alley, the series of films on Turner Classic Movies. Eddie will be with us momentarily, and then we'll be talking about some of the great denser architecture we're known for here in Southern California and some of the answers it might provide in efforts to create more affordable housing. We'll be back in a minute.
Support for LAist comes from Apple TV Plus, presenting Masters of the Air. Austin Butler stars as Major Gale Buck Cleven.
He was one of the best pilots. Some say he was the best pilot in the eighth, and he was a man of few words and a man of action. A remarkable, intelligent guy who went on to also fly in Korea and Vietnam. And I think we've tried to portray him as true to life as possible. You go up for 8 hours, say, and you don't know if you're going to come back. Sometimes it's the most horrific things you've ever seen. And then you come back, and people are wearing suits and ties, and or they're going to London, and they're getting a hamburger, and they're meeting women, and they're having a party, and then you go up and you do it again, day after day of that. I think that definitely, it has a bizarre psychological toll.
Anthony Boyle, who plays reluctant navigator Lieutenant Harry Crosby, explains the physical demands on the actors.
There's a plane on a massive sort of crane kind of thing, and you sort of get loaded up, and it's a tiny little sort of door that you have to get through. And you've got all the sort of the gear on, and you get so hot up there that we had these things that F1 drivers wear, these like vests, cooling vests. You sort of plug them in, and then you're up there all day. It was tough at times. You're up there for, you know, 7 hours, and there's 4 or 5 fixed cameras in the plane, 360-degree screen around you. You can't get in or out because it takes so long to get the gimbal up. So it was, I was going to say it was a lot of fun, but it wasn't. It was grueling at times.
Like the rest of the cast, Callum Turner, who stars as Major John Bucky Egan, was thrilled to work with the same executive producer team behind the Emmy-winning Band of Brothers and The Pacific.
Well, it's just really exciting, actually, because it's what you want to do. You know, you want to be working with people that inspire you. We've got 4, 5 really incredible directors, you know, who've made beautiful, beautiful pieces of work. And to represent the Air Force, the Air Corps, it's a real privilege. You know, these are real people who sacrificed their lives, and you are responsible for telling their story. You know, you're responsible for the souls of these men. And I think Austin and I felt that.
Gold Derby hails this series as a masterpiece. More on Masters of the Air at fyc.appletvplus.com.